Voices Up Front on the Voice of America. I'm your host, Jackson Vunganyi, and we're coming to you from the Voice of America studios here in Washington, D.C. We want to thank you for joining us today. Now, research shows that sub-Saharan Africa leads the world in the rates of female entrepreneurship. That's women-run or operated business ventures, from selling vegetables on a street corner in Monrovia to owning an airline in South Africa. Women-run businesses are a matter of necessity, mostly to support their families and, by extension, their communities. And when you take time to listen to their stories, the stories of their experiences and struggles, they're often fascinating and paint a complex picture of resilience and empowerment. There are also stories of women who often have to overcome, among many things, the gender and cultural biases that hinder them from operating their business. But like most stories in Africa, they often go untold. The good news is that more African storytellers are now committing their skills, time, and resources to tell these stories. They hope that by telling them, they will challenge existing narratives on their struggles, but most importantly, inspire a growing cohort of young African entrepreneurs around the continent. On the show today, we'll talk to Jacqueline Sibanda, a Zimbabwean-American storyteller who plans to visit all 55 African countries. Her mission is to find and tell the stories of African entrepreneurs. But before we get into our discussion with Jacqueline Sibanda and others, let's first listen to your opinions on today's topic. What are the female entrepreneurs that inspire you?
Only fire, only water, only money, only money, only money.
A woman entrepreneur who inspires me a lot is founder of the Malawi Face Technology Hub, known as the M-Hub. I'm impressed with this woman because she's just a girl. She's young and courageous. For example, she achieved a lot at her young age. For example, in 2016, she was among the 30 promising entrepreneurs in Africa.
A woman who inspired me a lot is our former head of state, Madam Joyce Banda. Being a former head of state here in Malawi, she has done so many great things being an entrepreneur. In a way that, as I'm saying now, she has a school, Joyce Banda Foundation. And having this school, she has tried to employ some teachers there, not even teachers, talking of accountants, and so reducing the rate of unemployment here in Malawi.
Many things we need to do with your mother, baby. Stop getting plenty money.
We would like to thank our listeners for sharing with us their opinions on today's topic of discussion. If you're just joining us, welcome and thank you. This is Upfront on the Voice of America. I'm Jackson Vunganyi, and we are talking about entrepreneurship in Africa with a special focus on women. Sub-Saharan Africa leads the rest of the world in the numbers of female entrepreneurs. But when you take time to listen to each one of these stories, the stories of these women, you will hear stories of resilience and empowerment. And, you know, many of these women have to overcome gender and cultural biases in their societies as they struggle to support their families and essentially support their communities. However, like I said earlier, their stories often go untold, and that is about to change. Jacqueline Sibanda, a Zimbabwean-American storyteller, joins me in the studio today, and she tells me that she plans to visit all 55 African countries. Her mission is to find and tell the stories of women entrepreneurs across Africa.
It is a simple idea to address a pet peeve of mine, and I'm a long-standing peeve, I'm sure, for a lot of Africans, of trying to unpack that Africa as a country trope. It's outdated, it's inaccurate, and in fact, if you're talking about Africa, you are talking about 55 stories, not one.
Not one story. So, and how are you going to tell these stories?
I want to use audio, and specifically audio, because data is expensive, right? It's expensive here, and it's certainly expensive across the continent. And I want to be able to give away the stories. in the global south because radio has such good reach. Even in the most rural communities, there's access to radio.
So you're going to tell 55 stories reflecting 55 countries of the African continent. In each country, you're going to tell one story.
My bar is very low. I need just one story from each country. I'm confident that I'll get more, but my baseline is one story from each country.
How are you going to decide which story to tell?
It's going to start by word of mouth. So where I have contacts, I'm asking, do you know an interesting woman entrepreneur who's doing great stuff, either using her enterprise for social impact or just running a really, really compelling business and doing very well?
It's going to be hard to find just one because there are like so many. So that I guess your biggest job will be obviously editing the stories down and other logistical challenges, but figuring out which one of the stories is much more compelling than the other. You know, because there's so many. Africa is rife with stories of women entrepreneurs who are resilient, working against all odds and have been able to survive and holding up their families and their communities,
and
half the sky.
As women too.
Right. So it will be a challenge, I guess, for you to be able to find that one story in a country to be able to tell. What kind of angles are you going to...
I'm trying to surface the stories that are not typically told. So as much as I think is great stuff, I'm tired of the tech startups, right? And I'm seeing quite a lot of the clothing, the African clothing. So I'm going to move away from those.
Those are kind of worn out now,
for lack of a better... Some of the things that have caught my eye as I'm traveling is, you know, a woman in Ghana at the traffic lights, planting chips, selling at the traffic light. She has figured out which intersection has the best business. She has figured out the packaging. When I bought a pack, they were hot. So however she's getting them from production to where the customer is, there's a process to that, and nobody really pays attention. It's not sophisticated business, but it is sophisticated because she's also got a baby on her back.
I feel like those are the really important stories we tell everyday stories about tech. Those are the cool stories to tell, but we forget that the people who raised us, our mothers, who were in the informal sector, were the real heroes, the real MVPs, for lack of a better term. So what inspired you? Why did you decide, you know, at this point in your career, you know, doing very well, like international development organizations, why did you decide that this is the next phase in your life or the next chapter in your life?
So I think it was more frustration than inspiration, because what I would see when I visited any country in Africa, mostly in the south, because that's where I'm from, that's where I have a network, what I was seeing, you know, was not necessarily reflected in the stories we were reading. And I think storytelling about Africa has gotten better, but still I was seeing so much stuff that just doesn't get out there. So, you know, why not me? If I'm missing it, then maybe I should be the one to take responsibility for filling the gap, right?
Basically, this whole idea that we need to start telling our stories. Stop complaining that our stories are not being told. Everybody should play a role. They have a duty in telling these stories.
Yeah, and if you have a mobile phone which has video and photos and a voice memo app, you can tell a story. So, no, I have no excuse.
One for the party, two for the money, three for the honey.
Yo, this is the Dread Mighty Sign, CAB312KFC. Listening to Upfront right here, the voice of America with Jackson and Nadia, no doubt.
Hi, this is Mariam from Kampala, Uganda, and I'm listening to Upfront on Voice of America. Ciao, ciao.
What's up, Africa? You are listening to Upfront on the Voice of America.
Why is it important to tell our stories?
I want to tell our stories because having seen, you know, having worked in international development, I see what the odds are for African women and for girls in Africa. And I think entrepreneurship is one of the ways women can empower themselves instead of waiting to be rescued. But also, you know, I moved to the UK at the age of 7, not speaking a word of English. And I think I have somewhat of an obligation to be brave because having seen some of the data about potential outcomes for a girl child in Africa, I realized the fact that my mother even survived my brother's birth to have a second child. I've already defied the odds.
Right.
So the prospect of trekking across Africa's 55 countries sounds monumental, should be scary, but...
It's also a personal challenge you're willing to take on.
It's a personal challenge I'm willing
to
take.
In a way, also
an
homage to your mother and all the African women that overcome these challenges every day.
Every day. But also, why not me?
Why not? Why not you?
Yeah.
Absolutely. And I think that's what everybody should be asking themselves. Why not,
me?
When do you hope to be done with this project? It's monumental. Are you going to travel all the 55 countries?
I have to, because otherwise I haven't done it. And I don't want to be on my deathbed saying, oh my God, there's one
I should have
country.
Done.
Yeah. So first of all, I'm not very patient, so I can't do this over 5 or 10 years. I would like to be done maybe in about 3 years. And Africa is interesting because you can cluster right by corners. So recently I went to Johannesburg, and from there I was able to go to Gaborone and, you know, other places, Lusaka, and get stories within that southern cluster. So I'm going to try to organize it that way. The tougher ones for me will be the Francophone and maybe Ethiopia. I don't have any Amharic skills. But that's going to be about using that network to get fixes and somebody that can help me get the story. So I don't necessarily have to do all the interviews. I just have to find, package, and distribute, right?
Yeah. We'll take a quick break, but we'll continue with our conversation later on with Jacqueline Sibanda. Don't go away.
Entrepreneur who does the agri business. An example is Grace in Hong. She grows crops including maize, tobacco, and legumes. Grace inspires me in the way that being a woman, she is strong, hardworking, and that oriented.
A woman entrepreneur that inspires me are those that are in agri business. They inspire me because they feed the nation, and it's a profitable business because every day people would want to eat. So venturing into agribusiness is a very good investment. We are assured of availability of market.
Welcome back. This is Upfront on the Voice of America. I'm Jackson Vunganyi. In the studio with me is Jacqueline Sibanda. She's a storyteller whose current mission is to travel the African continent to shine a light on some of the stories and experiences of female entrepreneurs, from the lady selling fabric in the market in Accra, Ghana, to a tech entrepreneur in Nairobi, Kenya. Stories of empowerment and resilience in the face of social to financial barriers. The African continent has been going through a lot of transformation changes over the past couple of years. How are you hoping to reflect that in your stories? But most importantly, let's talk about your logo, which itself had to go through
a transformation.
One,
I think my role in reflecting those changes will be to find the people that can tell them from the context, the people that are living these changes, you know, on a daily basis. And two, I wish Morocco... Well, I'm glad they're back in the African Union after 33 years out of the fold. I wish I had realized that before I created my logo, which was very beautiful.
Very interesting backstory to Jacqueline's logo was that when I first met her, I think you had it Africa 54. It was 54. We'll put it up so you guys can check it out. But
and
you
it
know,
was
you,
beautiful.
Yeah, it was beautiful, perfect, well done. And then Morocco decides to join the African Union after, which is a good thing.
Yeah, so
but then meant for you going back to the drawing board again now and talk to your graphic designer and say, how do we reflect Morocco?
Yeah.
I must say that the new logo looks equally beautiful. So
we'll show the before and after.
Right.
But basically, you know, Morocco left the OAU 33 years ago. ago and finally decided to come back to the fold January 2017. So I have this beautiful logo, 54 stories, and it's perfect. And I love it. And everybody goes, when they see it.
Mm.
But I keep reading about 55 countries.
Mm.
And I'm thinking, that can't be right.
Why is AllAfrica.com
making mistakes about the number of countries?
So many people are still making that mistake, by the way.
Yeah. So I went to the AU website, discovered Morocco, came back, and had to update the logo to reflect, because authenticity, right?
Absolutely.
To the continent matters.
Absolutely, that matters. So again, going back to the idea of this transformation in this, and the stories that you're going to tell that reflect the changes that have been happening on the continent, are you going to reflect it in demographics of people that you're going to interview? So an older woman in, say, in Liberia, you know, doing her business. I'm saying this because I have this a picture that I actually took on the street of Monrovia on a Sunday afternoon of a woman selling yams outside of a bank. I was looking for an ATM machine, and ATM machines in Monrovia, working ATM machines are very hard to come by. But I came upon, I found this woman selling her yams on the side of the street, on the side of the road, and she looked about 70 years old.
Wow.
You know, still, you know, in perfect health.
Yeah.
About 4 or 5 yams on there, so I decided to buy all of them, even though I wasn't, you know, going to cook them. But I just felt like I needed to support this person because I felt there was a story there. Even though I did not tell the story, I felt like I became part of the story by, you know, supporting the business. But I feel like that's the story in itself. There's also a story of that woman, a younger woman in her 20s, carrying a baby on her back, like you said, in Ghana, selling.
Yeah. Well, I love that. First of all, there's already strategy in her decision to be outside the ATM.
Mm-hmm.
So,
because you know people will be there.
Actually have cash. And I had that moment recently as well, on my way to Kumasi in Ghana. A woman wanted to sell me plantain chips. I said, I'll trade you. I'll buy the chips, but I need a photo. And I've got a beautiful photo.
Ah, that's beautiful.
It's amazing. So quid pro quo, you know, there's opportunity, there's enterprise. And there is a diversity of ages, of situations, you know, and I'm fully expecting to get those stories. And I think what we sometimes fail to capture right now is that Africa has more than black Africans, right? There's a lot of Indians.
There's a lot of diversity on the continent we overlook. Jacqueline Sibanda, we wish you the very best. Thank you very much for coming in today. And we hope to have you back soon.
Thank you.
After the voyage across the continent, 55 stories.
Just make sure your show stays on the air. So
we will be here. We will be here.
Back.
We're not going anywhere.
Thank you for having me, Jacqueline.
This is Upfront on the Voice of America. I'm Jackson Vunganyi. Coming up next is our Upfront correspondent, Joey Muthengi in Kenya. Joey talks to Anita Soina, a young environmental activist based in Nairobi. Anita is the founder of Spice Warriors, an initiative that mobilizes young Kenyans to be advocates for their environment.
My guest today is Anita Soina, who is the CEO and founder of Spice Warriors and also a social media marketer who is quite passionate about environmentalism. So we'll be talking to her about that. Before we get to the environmental conversation, Anita, Spice Warriors, why that name?
Oh, Spice Warriors, because the warriors started because we were fighting for the environment, and the spicy part is because we have our symbol being the red chili, and in this case I believe our work is to disrupt those at the comfort zone, to stop thinking that the earth is not dying and to start working on it.
Now you are 19 years young and CEO of your own company. When did you start this company, and why environmentalism?
When I was 17, that is in the year 2017, I met Eric Masanza, who's my mentor now. He's also the founder of Spice Without Borders. So I had the name Spice Warriors, but I didn't know what to do. I wanted to do everything. I wanted to fight poverty. I wanted to do the SDG number 4 in the quality education and also climate action. After I found my passion in conservation, after I noticed that I used to love trees so much, every time I visited my grandfather, I would go and check on his forest. So after that, I decided to do conservation. And also after a lot of research, I noticed that there's a big gap. So even if I'm fighting poverty, am I doing it in a vacuum? No, the environment has to be good to want to survive.
You're also studying in school right now, studying PR and corporate communication.
Yes.
How does that tie in with your passion for environmental conservation?
Basically, when it comes to PR, I do a lot on social media. That's why I started as a social media marketer, and then it reached a point that I saw, let me use this skill to push and to spread the message of conservation. Because as we speak right now, 90% of the youth are on social media.
Yeah.
As you speak,
so it's a way to, for you
yeah,
to reach
Yeah, so it's it. A way to, yes. to reach people, and it's also a good way to communicate to the young people, because I believe by getting the young people, it's something easier. Because we are told, let's talk about food security a bit. We are told that the world population is increasing, and by the year 2050, we'll have an increase of world population by 20 billion. And we are told many farmers are of age 65. So by that time, of course, they'll be 90. If the youth don't stand and do what they're supposed to do, then we'll not achieve the zero hunger issues and stuff. So same case to the environment, because in the ministries, we'll find people like C.S. Kariako Chobiko here in Kenya. He's so old, so after him, who's next? And the youths are just, they're on social media, they're not thinking about what is important.
Yeah, so how do you answer that? People who say young people just get on online and you know, complain about things or, you know, use social media more than actually being on the ground, actively, you know, pursuing some of these things.
Okay, people say, why do youths like going online but they don't do it on the ground? But what I can tell them is that the little thing someone can do is better than being online and not addressing the issue at all. But again, it's also important for people to get on the ground. But before you get on the ground, make sure you tell people why you're doing this. Greta, who is 16 years old from Sweden, was nominated for the Nobel Peace Prize Award, and I was checking the comments, and people were like, so what has this girl done apart from just taking a sheet, writing on a manila paper, and then demonstrating out of parliament, skipping classes? There's nothing she has done. She's not even planted a tree. And I was like, no, she has tried. So you at home with your work from 8 to 5 or with anything you have, what have you done? The little thing that Greta did alone was enough for her to be nominated, because she's 16, but she has challenged me a lot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Wow. So Spice Warriors, how big is this movement, and how is it that people are able to join you in this type of effort for environmental conservation?
First, it's not big. And the reason why it's not big, but it's growing, is because people fear voluntary work. Mm-hmm. The moment you tell someone that you are volunteering, you are using our own bus fare to go to this place to go groceries, people don't like. So, but I can say the few members who are in are so active, and they're my fellow students. So you can imagine the little money that your parents give you, you're trying to divide. This one is for this. This one will go to the environment part.
Mm-hmm. So what types of activities do you guys engage in? You talked about, you mentioned going to plant trees. Mm-hmm. What other types of activities?
Cleanups. Mm-hmm. And a lot of campaigns. Yeah, because it has reached a point that we are not begging the world leaders anymore. They have ignored us, and of course they will still ignore us. They don't understand the importance of conservation. So they will always talk about taking conservation from the forums to the villages or to the homes, mm-hmm. and they still use the tough language in conservation. So what I'm trying to do is to simplify the language of conservation so that people can join, and we're trying to avoid this issue that people say conservation is for people who have studied environmental science only, mm-hmm. because of the tough language. And also, most of the time when you see we have the World Forest Day or any other days to celebrate environment, you will find that leaders of one office from the main street planted one tree, which is so funny, because that tree will be posted by everyone who was in that place, and then we'll think that there were a lot of trees planted, yet it was only one tree. So we want to disrupt the people. We want to get them to know that the power does not belong to them and power belongs to the people. I think it's time that we as youths stand up for this.
Of course, we can't talk about conservation without talking about the late Professor Wangari Maathai and all that she did for conservation here in Kenya. Mm. Has that impacted you personally?
Yes, because most of the things I don't understand about conservation because I'm not a student in conservation. That's why I normally go online to learn about Wangari Maathai, to know about her courage and everything, how she did it, how she, what she was doing exactly. And even funny enough, people still call me Wangari Maathai.
Really?
Yes.
Well, isn't that funny? I didn't even know that. That's interesting. So generally, as Kenyans, do you feel like we have a conservation culture happening other than, you know, you bringing in this movement? Do you feel like Kenyans are naturally into environmental conservation?
Kenyans are not. Yes, they are not. Because if you look at the issue where last time we were told that there was a lion killed, a cow killed a lion, you remember?
Mm-hmm.
People
mm-hmm.
didn't ask themselves. It was funny, yes, but what people should ask themselves is, what was the lion doing in a cow's place?
Mm-hmm.
It's because our parks are drying. And people are not seeing this. Few years to come, we are told 5 years to come we'll have a human wildlife conflict, and
that's
still people don't do anything about it. You tell them that in the next 12 years the earth will be in a position where we'll not be able to change anything. They are still not afraid because the same people will be cutting trees. Yeah, there's this issue about firewood. Why I'm saying Kenyans are not concerned is because we can't tell the poor people to stop using firewood for something in the rural areas, yet we can't give them the alternatives, or maybe they cannot afford. But they also know that next year they will need firewood. The other year they'll need firewood. So as they cut the trees, they should be replacing. Mm-hmm. Because next year they'll be crying for the government to come in and help them. But it won't work.
Yeah. What is the future of Spice Warriors? Where do you want to take this company of yours? And how is it that you're planning to get, especially young people, like you said, more involved in caring about the environment?
In 5 years' time, if not four, I believe Spice Warriors will be the next big movement, just like scouting, but championing for conservation. So, like, right now we have Spice Warriors India, which was started by my friends who loved my work on social media.
Oh, wow.
They just opened social media accounts, then they send me the passwords and everything. So we're starting to work online. So at least right now we're reaching the people of India, Spice Warriors India, mm-hmm. which is, I feel, is a big step towards getting Spice Warriors as the next big movement. And also this month I will be launching an environmental club at Kisumu National Polytechnic, from 16th to 20th, where we will plant 3,000 trees during the 4 days and also launch the club.
Wow. So you've got plans. It's so refreshing to hear people using social media for good, because a lot of times we look at it as a negative space, but the fact that you are championing for your passion and your cause in your company is very refreshing. So just some final words to young people who might be listening.
If you think the economy is better than the environment, try holding your breath while you count your money.
Ooh.
If it's possible, don't conserve.
Wow. I think we'll just end it on that note. That was perfect. Thank you so much. We've been talking to Anita Soina, who is the CEO and founder of Spice Warriors, and she's been telling us about her passion for the environment and why conservation matters. For VOA, my name is Jordan Thengi here in Nairobi, Kenya. Everybody run,
run, run. Thank you, Joey. That was Joey Muthengi speaking to Anita Soina, an environmental activist based in Nairobi. And thanks to all of you for listening to Upfront. Make sure to connect with us on our social media. Joey is at Joey_Muthengi. That's on Twitter. My handle is at Upfront Africa. Also, remember to check us out on our Facebook, keywords Upfront Show. Just search Upfront Show and, connect with us. Share, leave a message. Until next week, remember, as the African elders say, an intelligent enemy is better than a stupid friend. I'm Jackson Vunganyi. Good night, Africa. Them live sorrow, tears and blood. Them regular trademark. Them regular trademark. Them regular trademark.
la 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 la. My people said they fear too much. We fear for the thing we